Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And welcome to the new year.
Yes, welcome.
And welcome to the show. Today we're talking about Black Eyed Peas.
Not the band.
Not the band too much.
Probably obviously not the
band.
Well, but in case anyone thought we made some weird New Year's resolution.
Sharp turn.
No. I like that we're entering the new decade with Black Eyed Peas.
Me too.
Yes.
It's a Southern tradition.
It is.
To eat black eyed peas on New Year's Day.
Yes. A while back, we did an episode around the traditional Southern New Year's meal, which is generally some type of pork, greens, black eyed peas, and cornbread. And these all represent basically luck and money.
Sure.
In the coming year. And there's a chance I'm eating this right now as you listen. I've already got it all ready to go. I just have to cook it. I love black eyed peas, but this is literally the only time of year I eat them.
Really?
And it kind of bums me out. I don't know. I should eat them more.
You should eat them more. They're available.
I know.
They're not available like fresh.
It's true.
Other times of year.
I've actually only cooked them fresh once in my lifetime.
Yeah? How'd you feel about it?
It was good. I'm somebody who scoffs at soaking things.
Oh.
And you had to soak them.
Soak scoffer, I see.
I'm a soak scoffer, and I didn't want to do it. I'm lazy, essentially. So the cans are easier, but they were really good. I just didn't like the soaking part of it.
Well.
It brings back memories of the butter beans, and I don't like thinking about that. If anyone doesn't know about my butter bean drama, that's okay. But I got some built-up memories there.
That's all that blanching. It's hard. It's hard.
And it hurts. It hurt. I probably just wasn't doing it correctly, but that's okay. The black eyed peas in this Southern traditional New Year's meal is supposed to represent luck, or that's what it was in my family. I hear most other people think it's like coins.
Coins, yeah, because it's got the little circle on them.
Exactly. And
sure.
Coin shape, I suppose.
I don't think that beans are in any way shaped like coins, but you'd have to be squinting pretty hard.
I feel like I've played at least one video game where you pay for things with coins. Not with coins, with beans! With beans!
Apparently the saying is peas for pennies, greens for dollars, and cornbread for gold.
Yes. And we bought into it when we were children. This is how my mom, I was all about it, but my brothers don't like either collards, which is what we normally had, or black eyed peas, but they ate them because they believed.
In the luck.
Or at least they didn't want to risk it if it wasn't true. But okay, I guess that brings us to our question.
Mm-hmm.
Black eyed peas. What are they? It turns out they go by a lot of different names. For one, we're mixing it up all. I'm coming in with some angry response because as we were doing the research for this, I saw cow peas, cowder peas, southern peas, field peas, or long beans, asparagus beans, or yard long beans. Too many names. Pick a lane.
Yeah. Well, no matter what you call them, black-eyed peas are, they're not peas.
Exactly.
They do share the same family, the legume family, but black-eyed peas are a species of bean. And I have it here, and I couldn't find a pronunciation. I'm going to try Vigna unguiculata.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's call it that.
Let's do it.
That is the exact species. And to be even more exact, they are a subspecies that has particular markings. When mature and dried, this bean is a small white to cream colored thing with a inky black, brown, or purple ring seemingly just stamped right at the top. Or like if you think of a bean as sort of like a blunt heart shape
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. Yeah, it's like right at the apex of the heart.
Aw.
Yeah. So much nicer than saying kidney-shaped.
It is. Why don't we do that?
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah. Related beans can come in other colors, red to brown to black to speckled multicolored to just cream without the spot, and are sometimes called by some of those same names.
Too many.
Humans. Mm-hmm. Get it together.
Come on.
The beans grow in these long, skinny, lumpy pods. And in some places, the pods are eaten while they're still green and the beans are immature, like snap beans. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the mature but still tender beans are shelled and cooked up fresh. And sometimes the beans are dried, which means they need to be soaked to rehydrate before cooking.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be okay. The leaves are also edible, similar to spinach.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And that dark ring is around the area that's like the bean's belly button. It marks where it was attached to the inside of the pod.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Apparently in France, they were originally called moguette, the French word for nun, because the black spot reminded some of how nuns dressed.
Oh.
I don't really see it, but okay.
Yeah, maybe like the hat, like the little headwear wimple combo.
Maybe.
I'm not sure. Anyway.
I like it.
The beans will dry out naturally on the vine. They are self-preserving. Once dried, they are really sturdy. They can last at least 200 years in this state and still be planted and sprouted afterward.
200 years?
I know, at least. Whoa. Research is ongoing.
They're just waiting it out?
I'm not sure.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, this was evolutionarily useful because if the weather's too dry for new plants to grow, the beans, which are, you know, like the fruit seed combo of the plant, could just hang out and wait until rain came again.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
The cowpea family is a warm climate crop grown mostly in tropical to subtropical regions because it will not tolerate frost. But it is really hardy. It's resistant to drought and pests. They're also good to plant alongside other crops. They're shade resistant and can crowd out weeds. Crowder. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They only take about 2 to 2.5 months to reach maturity. So if you are in a warm climate, you can get a good crop pretty late in the year.
Oh, nice.
Perhaps harvesting them somewhere in December.
Yes.
Strange. Mm-hmm. And although commercial operations may harvest them mechanically, they're pretty easy to shell by hand. They're just all around like a really agreeable plant.
I like it.
Yeah, me too. And beans in general are a valuable crop because they have like a lot of protein for vegetation, and B, grow with symbiotic bacteria in their roots. So like the plant and bacteria team up to pull nitrogen from the air. The plant takes in the air that has the nitrogen that it can't use. But the bacteria will fix it in the soil where the plants can soak it up through their roots.
Oh.
It's a whole process.
It is.
And most plants can't do this. So anything the beans don't get to use gets left in the soil after the crop is harvested and can be used by the next crop that gets planted there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Uh-huh.
What about the nutrition?
Yeah, that protein thing. They're up to 25% protein by weight.
Wow.
They're low in fat, high in fiber, have a punch of carbs, and contain just an absolute heck ton of minerals, a smattering of vitamins like thiamine and folate. They will definitely fill you up and keep you going pretty well, especially if you pair them with a little bit more fat and veg.
Like the traditional New Year's
exactly.
meal.
Exactly.
Wow. Perfect. You were onto something.
Oh, and a side note about why beans are, in fact, the musical fruit.
Finally, get to the bottom of this. I've been wondering since elementary school.
All right, so some of those carbs they contain are sugars that we humans, like all other mammals, do not have the enzymes to break down in our digestive system. But the bacteria in our guts sure do have those enzymes, so the sugars pass into our guts. The bacteria there eat them and excrete carbon dioxide, methane, and a few other gases. And we pass those gases. So the moral of the story is, A, everybody farts.
Mm-hmm.
And B, discard the slime around canned beans and the soaking water for dried beans and maybe like the cooking water for dried beans, too, if you want to be like super careful because the sugars will wash out.
Uh-huh.
If you discard the soaking water. Yeah.
you never know what you're going to learn podcasting. Just in time, too.
Yep, you're welcome.
Thank you. Well, let's look at some numbers.
Yeah.
Nigeria is the world's top producer of black-eyed peas. They are also the world's top consumer and importer of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, the United States Agency for International Development found that the average Nigerian consumes 18 kilograms of black-eyed peas, the average Ghanaian 9 kilograms, and 1.8 kilograms per person in Cote d'Ivoire. Of the annual 5.4 million tons of black-eyed peas produced, 96% come from Africa, with Nigeria making up 61% of that number and 58% globally.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Black-eyed peas are popular in dishes in Africa, particularly West Africa, India, Myanmar, Brazil, the Caribbean, and the southern United States. They feature prominently in things like Hop and John, more on that later. And in Brazil, peeled and mashed black-eyed peas, then fermented overnight and fried in palm oil are a popular street food. Nigeria has pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
In Africa, they are part of the daily diets of millions of people. They might be boiled and eaten with rice and or fried tomatoes and onions and plantains. Sometimes they are ground up into flour, later made into porridge. Some places in sub-Saharan Africa label this crop miracle peas or poor man's meat due to their ability to weather tough conditions and their nutritional profile.
Yeah, I've read that in sub-Saharan Africa as a whole, they are the primary source of protein in people's diets.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Because of its significance in the diets of so many, the International Institute of Tropical Agriculture is experimenting with varieties of black-eyed peas that produce higher yields or are resistant to pests. As of now, IITA boasts the world's largest and most diverse bank of black-eyed peas, 15,122 unique samples from 88 countries.
Oh,
that's so cool.
I love it. Yeah. England's Royal Botanical Gardens, Kew, has a science arm that also works on seed collection, and the black-eyed pea is one of 29 crops that they have deemed a potential savior of our future food security. They thus also have a collection of not just cultivated varietals of black-eyed peas, but also their cousins that grow in the wild.
See, you didn't think that the black-eyed pea was going to be a good start to the decade. But look at this.
It is.
It is. When it comes to their place as a representation of luck in the Southern New Year's meal, or coins, what have you, most food historians think it has to do with humility. As one saying goes, eat poor on New Year's and eat fat the rest of the year. Or it could be as simple as they kind of look like coins, like we said. That's what I always assume personally. And I guess having money is lucky. It's fortunate, for sure.
Sure.
Sort of related, some think it's because when cooked, the volume of black-eyed peas substantially increases, making it hopefully a representation of wealth and abundance increasing.
One of my favorite food blogs, Botanist in the Kitchen, wrote about black-eyed peas, quote, "Just like optimism, beans are cheap enough that anyone can have them."
I love that.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As we mentioned in our New Year's traditions episode, there are even more specific traditions around black-eyed peas. One goes that you have to eat them before noon on New Year's Day to benefit from the luck and more money.
12:01. It's like gremlins. You can't eat them afternoon.
That's probably where the plot of Gremlins came from now that I think about it. Another goes that you have to count out 365 or 366 of black-eyed peas, one for each day of the coming year. No thank you.
That sounds like a lot more counting than I generally care to do.
I did used to really like counting.
Yeah?
When I was a kid, I liked to count. And I won a lot of contests that way.
Like guess how many?
Yeah. Oh, I'm really good at those. Maybe I should count. Oh, okay, maybe I will. I've seen black-eyed peas referred to as poor man's caviar in the South or Texas caviar. Mm-hmm. And thinking about it too, most of these lucky Southern foods are ones that do grow during tough winter months, aka around New Year's. And as we've said before, pre-refrigeration, people frequently slaughtered their pigs before winter and salted the pork to make it through the season. So it kind of just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Delicious scents.
Delicious, delicious scents. And there's a pun there. There's a pun. But anyway, let's move on from bad puns and talk about some history.
Yes, but first, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Black-eyed peas most likely originated in Africa or possibly Asia.
Probably Africa.
Probably. It's still debated because their taxonomic name suggests they are from Asia, but records seem to indicate they were growing in the wild in Africa prior to their existence in Asia. As always, we know that the names of things can't always be trusted.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
But yeah, different people at different times have thought, Asia? Africa?
Mysteries. History.
Mm-hmm.
They were domesticated in West Africa at least 5,000 years ago, and they've been cultivated since prehistoric times in tropical Asia, and especially in what is now India. Ancient China grew them, too. They are related to the mung bean.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One of our interviewees from New Orleans, Dr. Jessica B. Harris, wrote an article over at the New York Times about the history of black-eyed peas that was super helpful for all of this. Totally go check it out if you're interested. She also has a lot of books we highly recommend about all kinds of this stuff, all kinds of stuff that we're talking about. Ancient Greeks and Romans preferred the black-eyed pea to the chickpea.
Apparently.
Apparently. Interestingly, black-eyed peas have been considered a lucky food to eat on New Year's for a long time, at least as far back as 500 CE, when the Talmud mentioned the eating of black-eyed peas for Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Some historians believe that Sephardic Jews brought this tradition with them when they immigrated to the United States, and records put the first wave of Sephardic Jews in Georgia by the 1730s. This is around the same time records of black-eyed peas suggest that they were plentiful in that area, enough so people started calling them field peas. The name cow peas also popped up around this time. Allegedly, they got their name because of their association as animal feed, particularly for cows.
There you go.
But that's one version. These names, cow pea and field pea, could have originated much earlier, with the common practice in Africa of planting the peas along the border of fields to help manage the weed population, fortify the soil, and the stems and leaves gave cows something to snack on.
Yeah, the leaves and pods are considered like a really good livestock snack.
Mmm. Sounds good. I don't know why. I love eating leaves. It's just a weird thing to say, but I love that every time we find out, oh, you could actually eat the leaves of this.
Yeah.
That is I'm like, very
oh,
exciting.
Really?
I know.
Right? Yeah.
All right. Oh, and also, some accounts suggest that Egyptian pharaohs ate black-eyed peas to grant them humility.
Okay.
So, yeah. Who knows? The black-eyed pea arrived to the New World from West Africa as part of the slave trade, perhaps arriving to the West Indies first and then migrating through the American South. The first written records put the black-eyed pea in the Americas by 1674. One historian wrote, quoted from Dr. Harris's article, "Everywhere African slaves arrived in substantial numbers, cowpeas followed." Prior to the Revolutionary War, they became one of South Carolina's biggest cash crops. And while they were at first relegated as a food for the enslaved, poor white people, or as animal feed, they did start to make their way into the diets of middle and upper class Americans. Mary Randolph's 1824 version of The Virginia Housewife featured a recipe of fried field pea patties. Yeah. As with most Southern foods, several accounts of the traditional Southern New Year's meal posit that it spread during the Civil War, after Union soldiers plundered Confederate food supplies but left behind the pork and the peas, believing that they were animal feed, or in the case of the pork, salted pork, they might not have really cared to have it. In popular retellings of this version of events, Confederate soldiers felt lucky to have access to these foods when provisions were scarce, especially during the winter. Yet another story posits that black-eyed peas represent the emancipation of enslaved African Americans. The first New Year's after the Civil War ended was the date they were officially granted freedom. Some records suggest that some men even put black-eyed peas in their wallets for prosperity.
Yeah, keep the money next to the money.
Of course.
Sure.
Why didn't I think of that? The Creole people added black-eyed peas, rice, and pickled pork to make a dish called jambalaya au congri, congri meaning black-eyed peas.
Thomas Jefferson planted the peas at Monticello.
I feel like he planted everything
what
at Monticello.
What didn't he plant? Gosh.
That is a question for a future episode.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Hoppin' John, sometimes called Happy John, specifically, and this is an American Southern dish of black-eyed peas, rice, often pork or a ham bone, and definitely seasoning, although there are a lot of versions of it.
A lot.
If you aren't familiar. Historians agree that its roots go back to West African dishes composed of rice and black-eyed peas. Dishes similar to Hoppin' John are made in parts of Africa to this day. Records show the dish was a staple among enslaved people in the southern U.S., particularly in the Gullah country of South Carolina. Rice and black-eyed peas were both cash crops in that area. Still, others posit the dish might be Islamic in origin, since Senegalese and Nigerian Muslims have a similar dish, swapping out the pork for jerked beef. Recipes for the dish started appearing in early 20th century American cookbooks. Didn't we? Now that I think about it, didn't we have some Hoppin' John when we were in Asheville?
Yes. It was part of the very first meal that we had when we got up there at the Sierra Nevada Brewery.
That's right.
Yeah. And it was a very, very fancy Hoppin' John dish. It was the best $19 I've ever spent on Hoppin' John.
It was good.
It was really good.
Huh. Because I was about to say, I can't remember the last time I had it, but that was it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Speculation abounds about the origin of the name. One points to the old expression, "hop in, John," used to invite guests over for a meal. Yet another describes a hilarious and probably not real tradition where children would hop around the table once before digging into this dish.
Oh, that sounds like a thing I would have done when I was a kid.
Yeah.
If someone had told me, this is lucky, do it, I would have been like, this is an excuse to wreak some havoc in this kitchen.
Okay, because when I read it, I thought, why? But you're right. Maybe kids like any reason to hop around,
truth.
I suppose. In his 1981 book, Rice and Beans, The Itinerary of a Recipe, John Thorne theorized that the name Hoppin' John was a corruption from the French pois au pigeon, pigeon peas. Pigeon peas didn't really take off in the southern United States, but they did in the Caribbean, so the term might have resulted from some confusion.
It seems like a big leap. I don't know.
I can hear the John, pigeon.
Pigeon, sure, yeah.
Oh, who knows?
Yeah.
We do what we can, but mysteries, histories all the time. From a 1913 Chicago Tribune article called "Secret of Hopping John Out, Recipe Told for the Dixie Dish." The secret of Hopping John is out, and they do put the G at the end.
They do.
The composition of this famous southern dish, about which successive generations of the cooks of Dixie have thrown a veil of mystery, has been disclosed by an investigation conducted by the Department of Agriculture and is given to the world in Farmer's Bulletin number 509, issued today.
Not 509.
509.
Gosh.
This is the recipe guaranteed by the government for the production of the true Hoppin' John. Soak 1 quart of dried cow peas overnight in water enough to cover. Cook until they are tender, adding more water if necessary. Cook a pint of rice and 3 pints of water. Mix the two. Season with 2 tablespoons of butter and 2 teaspoonfuls of salt. A little beef or pork may be added to the water in which the peas are cooked. Then the bulletin proceeds to sing the virtues of cow peas in general, which the government opines ought to be better known north of the Mason and Dixon line.
That's wonderful.
It's so funny.
Especially because, yes, they definitely call it Hopping John.
Yes, this mysterious southern dish. Oh, man.
In the first few decades of the 20th century, black-eyed peas and their cousins were the most popular legume for livestock feed in the United States. That all started changing with the introduction of soybeans, and I think the flip happened in the 1930s where soybeans took over. And then later with a pest that started blighting southern pea crops, this weevil that just wreaks havoc on black-eyed peas. So production here in the States is much smaller now than it was at the beginning of the 20th century, and mostly for human consumption, and is still troubled by this weevil. I read that a lot of Georgia growers are really having problems, weevil problems.
Didn't we see a giant statue of a weevil?
We did. It was real weird.
But kind of wonderful.
Yeah, that was on our field trip to Dothan, Alabama.
Future episode about peanuts.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but now we got to talk about a very important event.
We do.
In Los Angeles, in 1995, one Will.i.am Apple Dap, or perhaps it's APLDEAP with dots in between. We're a little behind the times.
We're a little 2000 and late.
We are.
Yeah.
Jamie Gomez, a.k.a. Taboo, and Kim Hill formed a little group called Black Eyed Pods.
What?
Yep. Later renamed the Black Eyed Peas.
Oh.
If you're wondering why they chose that name, Will.i.am once said that black-eyed peas are food for the soul, while also citing the Red Hot Chili Peppers as an influence and saying he wanted to name the band after a food like them.
Aw.
Black-eyed peas.
Huh. The beans enjoyed a moment in the sun when the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization named 2016 the International Year of Pulses. Which is another word for dried beans, like black-eyed peas.
Oh, okay. It's like, I like pulses.
Yeah.
Good.
Pulses are great. Yeah, I enjoy having one.
Yes. Wonderful. As of 2019, scientists at UC Riverside decoded the genome of the black-eyed pea in hopes of feeding the world's growing population, especially as the effects of climate change become more apparent. Understanding the black-eyed pea's toughness could help toughen up other crops as well. It's one of only a handful of other crops to be completely sequenced.
And they contain about 37,000 genes, so it's impressive work.
That is impressive work.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the research continues. Farmers and scientists are looking at different varieties of black-eyed peas to find winning traits, you know, a particular resistance to drought or tolerance to pests, diseases, and competing weeds. In general, less research of this type has been done with this bean than other sustenance crops like corn or rice or wheat or potatoes, basically because black-eyed peas are less finicky. But yeah, as with any crop, developing varieties that are even hardier and more productive would help farmers out, which helps everybody out.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting stuff.
It is.
I'm feeling inspired.
Me too. This was, I had no idea what we were in for when we started doing this research, and it turned out to be more delightful than I thought.
I feel like that happens with everything we do. And that's one of my favorite things of the job.
Me too. There's always some weird fact about bacteria farts that I'm just like, well, this has made it all worthwhile.
Everything. This is a good way to start the year.
It is.
And we hope that some of you, at the very least, found this as entertaining as we did. But maybe you're having some black-eyed peas, or maybe you're convinced to go get them now.
Yeah.
Yes. Ugh. But we do have a little bit more for you.
We do, but first we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Dun, 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 dun. God, I was so into that song when it first came out.
Yeah.
But it has been a very long time.
It's been a minute or two at least.
At least. Sarah wrote, the end of the candy cane episode, you said you liked animal pictures, even if they're not named after food. So I thought I'd share a little pet saver serendipity with you.
Oh, yes.
I have a pet snake named AJ.
Oh, yeah.
And my sister is afraid of him because she doesn't like snakes in general. Side note, we are both adults and don't live together, but we live within easy visiting distance. But she hasn't been to visit since I got AJ.
Oh, no.
A few weeks back, she sent me a picture she had found online of a snake in a sweater and said that she'd be less scared of AJ if he was wearing a sweater.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought the holiday season would be a good time to knit him a Christmas sweater, so I made one with red and white stripes so he'd look like a candy cane. Candy canes and snakes are both long and thin, right?
Absolutely.
Your episode on candy canes came up right as I was finishing the sweater, so I listened to the episode while I coaxed AJ into the sweater for a photo shoot. I don't think he liked it very much, but I've attached some photos so you can judge for yourself. They're amazing, adorable.
Oh.
That is so wonderful.
That is the best, because snakes are so chilly, and they just yes. want to be cozy and warm.
Yes. And a holiday, festive holiday sweater attire.
Festive holiday snakes are even better than other snakes, and I really love snakes, so.
I do, too. I would love to know if your sister is swayed
yeah.
by this sweater.
Yeah, update us.
Yes,
let us know.
Please do.
Haley wrote, I'm writing from the beer-loving Hippie Hick, Missoula, Montana. Animal Crackers was my most recent listen, and I love that you mentioned rotary dyes and their importance to production. I work in a vitamin and supplement factory. We blend and mix the ingredients by the barrel, put them into tablet or capsule form. I'm a level one tab press operator. Then package them to be sent to nationwide stores and even Korea and Taiwan. On old whirring tab presses, we make a chewable teddy bear-shaped vitamin for children. Think a classic Flintstones variety. The bears look similar to gummy bears and are made with rotary dyes. These have a lot of issues. The powder is sensitive to humidity changes and are sweet, so are more likely to caramelize. When the dyes get gunk in them, the product has picking, kind of like a Play-Doh mold with lots of hardened pieces on it that produces a less detailed image. What's the first detail we lose? The butt. When running teddy bears, we are constantly inspecting the bear booties to make sure the dyes are clean. Imagine people in white hazmat suits, bunny suits, asking supervisors in lab coats to check the little tushies under a big lit-up magnifying glass to ensure that no flat-assed bears leave the facility. I would expect the production floor at any animal cracker company to be equally frustrated about the oddly shaped animals. Anyway, thanks for expanding both my knowledge and curiosity about food. I love to listen when I cook, and I have whispered yeast poo under my breath at many a brewery.
So have we. Oh, yes. I love that. I've never really thought about people in hazmat suits.
Like, having to inspect the butts of
little vitamin bears.
Yeah.
Thank you for all the work you do.
Yes, thank you.
And thanks to both of them for writing in. If you would like to write to us, we would love to hear from you. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. If you'd like to hear more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.